Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Monday here on The Opening Bell. We're glad you're along with us. English majors in the U.S. are down nearly a quarter percent, 25% since the Great Recession. One of the world's top economists says maybe we need more English majors and storytellers in the world of business and economics. And joining us to talk about one of her recent stories is Heather Long. Heather is the economics correspondent at The Washington Post. And good morning again, Heather. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Steve. Good to be back.
This is an interesting story. We actually just finished a segment with a life coach, a motivational speaker, who told us about how storytelling is becoming a lost art, not only among just people, but in business as well, and why it's important that we be able to craft a good story to tell not only what we can do in the business place, but what our companies can do as well.
I mean, that's right. I think anyone who believes in the liberal arts tradition in college would agree that so much of life is storytelling, and that's whether you're trying to tell a story about to sell a product, or trying to motivate fellow people, or convince people to vote for a bill, or to sign on to an action. Human beings by nature are storytellers, and people want to. Data is useful, and I write a lot of data and stories, but what's the most powerful is when you have a human example, a human story to go along with it. And so I think what really struck me is to hear some of the most prominent economists in the world making the case for why we need people who are better at convincing others through storytelling.
Yeah, and talk to us a little bit about that. I know one of the people that you've mentioned here is a Nobel Prize winner, as a matter of fact, talking about how we need these storytellers. And he actually had, Robert Shiller had a good story about how his undergraduate work sort of made an impression on him about this.
Yeah, that's right. Robert Shiller is out with a new book called Narrative Economics, and the title pretty much says it all, that he's arguing that economics has really, the pendulum has swung so far towards data analysis, and it's basically a lot of PhD programs or applied mathematics programs, and he feels that what economists have been missing time and time again is understanding the role that stories play in shaping decisions that people make, decisions about spending, decisions about whether to buy Bitcoin, decisions about whether to buy a home. Why should we care about what Bob Shiller says? A, he did win the Nobel Prize in Economics, but B, he's done a lot of predictive work over the years. He is largely credited with predicting the dot-com bubble bust in late 2000-2001, and he's also really known for one of the most famous home price indexes, the Case-Shiller Index, that comes out every month, that's widely watched about whether home prices are going up and down. For someone who spent so much of his career being a data guy to come out at this phase and say, hey, wait a minute, what really is impacting a lot of spending decisions that people are making is, whether or not they feel, whether or not someone tells them, hey, you can get rich quick if you buy this Bitcoin, or you can really make a lot of money if you buy this home and you only have to put 1% down, even though these maybe are not rational things to do. People are listening to what others say in their community.
He is not just sort of making this stuff up either. He's been examining news stories about some of what he's been talking about and finding some real evidence.
Yeah, that's right. He goes through, he compares it a lot to the explosion of viruses. I mean, obviously most of us think of things like Ebola virus and how quickly something can spread He tracks that disease curve in medicine, and you know how quickly something can jump from person to person. And he basically creates similar phenomenon and maps similar phenomenon going on in the economy throughout time. He sort of does a lot of interesting historical examples. You know, to me, one of the most relevant ones is the Bitcoin phenomenon, and you know how quickly that news spread and how quickly people began to think, oh, I can really get rich quick if I buy into Bitcoin or another cryptocurrency. I'd say that's one of the more hot recent examples of a phenomenon like that.
Yeah, and another one, Heather, that's going on right now. I mean, this is something that we hear almost every day. President Trump telling us that this is the greatest economy of all time. Whether that's true or not, it's a good story that people are hearing and listening to.
I mean, look, President Trump certainly understands that he wants to keep the economy strong. And you know, as we learned last week when the GDP numbers came out, this economy is being powered almost entirely by consumer spending and a little bit of government spending. And the key to keeping consumer spending up is for people to, it sounds really basic, but for people to stay happy, for people to stay confident that they're going to keep their job and that they believe that, you know, they can go out and make a big purchase, whether it's a home or a washing machine or a car or a refrigerator. That's what really drives the economy. And it was interesting. Bob Shiller was arguing to me when we met and talked about his book that he said, oh, you know, President Trump in a lot of ways is projecting the luxurious lifestyle. You know, he likes to project that he got rich and he's a big spender himself. And you know, and that may be having a subtle influence on certain people's habits. You know, it'll take years before we can fully track it, but I think the president is doing everything he can to try to keep people feeling good about the economy.
So if we want to get more storytellers, we need to encourage more people to go into that and study that in college. Why are more people not studying English or one of the other whether it be something, you know, another liberal art aside from just English or speech?
Yeah, what motivated me to write this article is seeing how much the humanities have declined at my college. I went to a liberal arts college, an all-women's college called Wellesley College outside of Boston, and what happened at my college is similar to what happened at almost every higher education institute across the country. I encourage people to go and look up the statistics for their own institution. It's just starting in 2009 was sort of the peak of humanities majors. So history and English and religion and languages, you name it, in the humanities was pretty flat from about 1990 through 2009. And then there's just a straight downward track from 2009 to the present. At my own institution, the English major went from being the second highest on campus when I graduated in 2004. There were about 65 English majors. The last data available, there's 30 English majors. So it's cut in half, and it's gone from being the second highest major on campus to being down in like eighth or ninth, depending upon what year. So that's a huge transition in about a decade. And what's happening on college campuses is after the recession, even at liberal arts institutions or what are called elite colleges like Harvard and Yale and the Ivies or Stanford, you've seen this dramatic transition where students believe that they must get a degree that's going to get them a job. And in their minds, or at least the minds of a lot of parents, a job is easier to get if you get a STEM degree. So we've seen this huge explosion in particularly computer science majors on most campuses, but also mathematics majors are up and biology and a number of the other sciences. And at the same time, this dramatic enrollment decline, and particularly major decline in the humanities.
Yeah, and that's one of the interesting parts of that story is that you tell in the Washington Post in your story is that the kids who went and did get English majors, they have a little bit more stability in the job market than some of those STEM majors.
Yeah, if you, this is one of those times where when you actually look at the data and the government does track what happens, you know, what people major in, and then what happens to them sort of 5 years, 10 years, and then maybe 30 years down the line. And you know, I certainly was interested in poring over this data. I majored in English and economics, so I guess I did a little bit of both. But and when I went back and looked at this data, I was stunned, thinking, okay, so maybe English majors, you have this perception that they all end up as baristas at Starbucks, and that is not exactly the case. What you see in the data is the unemployment rate for English majors and a number of the humanities, including history, is actually a little bit lower than it is for computer science majors right out of school. Now, it is true that computer science majors do earn more, you know, several thousand dollars more right out of college than most English and history majors do. But what's interesting is over time, that premium, if you will, for the computer science major fades. And this really surprised me. So about a decade out, you start to see this transition where computer science majors no longer earn more. And a lot of economists who study this say, look, what happens is those computer science majors, when they graduate, maybe from the U of I or University of Chicago and whatnot, you know, they have the freshest and latest skills. And companies are willing to pay more for that. But over time, when you get into the middle part of your career, you know, a lot of people are beginning to climb the management track. And what skills are prized then? Yeah, sure, some technical coding skills are still prized a little bit, but you know, people want soft skills as they move into those management positions. And also, the latest technology changes. And unless you're going to really actively keep up with the latest coding and da-da-da, you know, the latest infrastructure with computers, you know, you're losing your edge to the next generation coming through. And so what's interesting is suddenly the gap closes and history and English majors and a lot of the humanities are earning about the same as a lot of those STEM fields.
Yeah, and I think one of the parts of the story that really puts a fine point on it as we close out here is the fact that the Federal Reserve right now is looking for a speech and policy writer, somebody who can communicate and tell a good story about the Federal Reserve.
That's right. I was at a conference of central bankers in August called Jackson Hole, one of the more famous gatherings, and the head of the Australian Central Bank stood up, and all these papers had been, research had been presented, very technical, mathematical, and he stood up and said, look, our biggest problem as central bankers is we need to be better communicators. We need to tell a story about how the economy is continuing to grow and not falling into recession that people believe, and that's storytelling, not models. And it was sort of like stunned silence in the room, and then all these hands shot up as people agreed with him, and some of that is being reflected, I think, in this latest Federal Reserve hire.
All right, Heather, thank you for being on with us this morning, sharing your reporting with us. We appreciate it as always.
Thanks a lot.
Heather Long, economics correspondent at the Washington Post. Make sure you follow her, too, on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong.